The Share Pickers Podcast.
Hi there, welcome to the podcast. I'm just about to chat to Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare, SP Angel. Before I do that, I just want to say, if you do want to join the Share Pickers Investment Club, it will be reopening very soon. It's had a major upgrade, and it's got some amazing features that I think will help every investor. There are a limited amount of spaces. I don't want it to become a full-time admin job, so it'll be opening up for a month initially, depending on the numbers. But if you do want to register your interest so I can let you know when it opens up, then please go to sharepickers.com/subscribe.
The Share Pickers Podcast.
And joining me now on the podcast and on video, if you want to see us in Technicolor, it's Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare, SP Angel. Yo, fella.
How are you doing, Justin?
Well, I'm not too bad, but I'm in serious danger of having to get a little sort of, inflatable boat out. The weather here, it's been 2 days now, it's been hammering down. And my dog is looking at me like it's my fault. She doesn't want to go out in the rain. I try and take it out and she just puts her bum on the floor. So it's not my fault it's raining. If you don't want to go out in the rain, I can't take it for a walk. here we are. Let's have a quick look. We are on a sort of, Thursday here. The market's looking pretty good. I don't know if you saw, there was meetings from the Fed yesterday. I didn't really pay much attention. I knew the markets dipped a little bit and they rose back up. NVIDIA results came out, beating again estimations and went above. But there we are. There's the FTSE 100 up a quarter of 1%, pretty much. AIM all share. It's up. It's all green on the screen.
But it's not quite in small caps. It's been a bit of a mixed week in small caps.
Specifically,
small caps healthcare here in the UK. But you're right, NVIDIA. You know, it's all the rage, right? Everyone's talking about how AI is going mainstream, and that's driving markets.
That's like the NVIDIA chart there. Look at that, literally. that's amazing. Yeah. From 165, pretty much to 770. Since 2023. That's a hell of a rally, isn't it?
Yeah.
The AIM all share, though, it's trying, though. If you look at the AIM all share, for example, AIM all share. I mean, like I said, that's a 200-day moving average. It's above that still. And that's quite a good level. It hasn't gone back to the recent lows. So that's quite good there. I don't know if you saw the economic data, Vadim, just now coming out. But Germany seems to be in big trouble at the moment. I mean, this is the German figures here. Composite is at 46. The PMI, of course, below 50 is contraction. But it's below estimations. But they're manufacturing. Now, they're a bigger manufacturing base than us. I mean, we are pretty much 80% service, 20% manufacturing. They are towards about 70% service, 30% manufacturing. Of course, you know, all those amazing cars they do, Audi, Mercedes, Volkswagen, all that. Suffering 42.3.
Yeah, that's a contraction.
Estimated to come in at 46.
Yeah,
wow. That is bad, isn't it? You have to understand the Europe. You know, they are the biggest economy in Europe. They are the powerhouse, and they are suffering worse there. Whereas we've got the UK here, and we got composite PMI 53.3. Services up, and manufacturing down a little bit. But it's not as bad as Germany. Germany's in trouble. So we are, as it keeps saying, technical recession. But I think now we're going to bounce out of that very quickly,
Yeah, well, exactly. I don't find the UK economy is suffering anywhere near as bad as, I guess, the markets here reflect. Do you see what I mean? Don't you find? We've been talking about a recession for all of eternity. It's barely a recession now 2 years on. You remember, we have been talking about an impending recession for a looming recession for 2 years. It hasn't really come. You know, we're in a thin technical recession, if you like. And I would question that because I think there's revisions that might wipe that out. But all things considered, the problem that we have, though, is the UK PE. I think the FTSE's, now obviously the FTSE 100 doesn't necessarily reflect the local economy, but I don't think the 250 is any different. They're trading on a low PE relative to the world. UK stocks are cheap. The economy isn't doing that bad. The pound is cheap. So we have the double positive, if you like, of foreign investors should be piling in anyway, and they are. I actually think foreign investors are investing because they see that they see sterling low, they see PEs very low. The PE ratios are pretty low here. And the economy isn't doing too bad. So I do think some people are catching on to that because the US is priced nosebleed levels at this point.
Yeah.
The gap between the US, PE ratios to UK PE rate? Well, you not just UK, the world, as far as, because I think Europe is also suffering in terms of the multiple expansion hasn't happened there yet, right? But it's happened there more than it has here. If you look at the German stock market, look at its rally, it's phenomenal. You know, the DAX has rallied like the, you know, almost as much as NASDAQ, whereas we haven't yet. So I genuinely feel the UK is a good place to invest. The problem we have is local investors aren't investing. You know,
but the thing is, I suppose the difference is like, you know, we have, where's the DAX index? This is DAX here, look at that. Wow. Yeah, and the annoying thing is, I suppose, if you are a UK, you know, investor, you've taken the brunt of the hit. And so you get this risk-averse situation where you don't want to throw any more money in because you've been hit the last 2 years. In fact, yesterday, Vadim, was the two-year anniversary of the start of the bear market on AIM. Now, that's not the peak. The peak is about 115 days before that. But 2 years since we dropped into a bear market, I mean, 20% from a low. So there we are. Right there. Yeah. Yes, 21st of February, 2022, we started the bear market. Now, the peak was back up here, but in September 2021. So that's the trouble. So now maybe your foreign investors thinking that's cheap, you know, because they haven't suffered the brunt of the fall, the sell off, like we have.
Yeah,
so they're
just
coming in, so and nicking stocks pretty much, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fair enough. I agree. I think our collective memories of the pain are still very strong. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you know, this is something in your sort of sector ish. Yesterday, I did say on X, or social media, I said, be careful of trading ranges because you see stocks like this. This is Shield Therapeutics, okay?
Yeah,
it's been basically, you know, oscillating between, six pence and 12 pence. Now, that's it's a good double there, but be careful. What I'd like to do is, you know, I want to invest in businesses that are improving. So hopefully they'll break up here and start a new uptrend. So ranges tend to be, you know, after an extended move, either up or down, you get a range. Because, you know, if it's going upwards, for example, you get some people taking profit at a certain level, then you get the bulls coming in saying, oh, I missed out on the stock, buying it, and some of the people taking profit. So you get this fight between the bull and bears. On the opposite side, you get coming down here, people now see it as a bit of a bargain. Most of the sellers may have dried up. But if you're trading this bottom of the range, be careful because, you know, it can break lower. Especially if companies come down like this, you know, it normally carries on. And we saw that with Shield Therapeutics yesterday, down 50%.
Yeah.
And so that's a very heck painful of a thing. So the news that came out, I don't know if you covered this, but.
No, for sure.
I didn't really see what the issue was here.
Yeah, the issue is that they had, you know, they were tracking certain data. In terms, what this company does is they have an iron, effectively a prescription iron supplement. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what distinguishes it from, say, the ones you buy at Holland Barrett's or on the high street is that, and the reason why it's prescription is that they have a technology, basically a delivery technology, that allows it to protect your, you know, the entire gut lining. Because many people, I don't know if you've ever taken iron. Part of the problem is it causes all kinds of, you know, indigestion and stomach problems. So if you can avoid that, and many people need iron, so they're anemic, so they need to get the iron, but they just can't, you know, they can't tolerate it. So this is a solution. And there is a market for this, you know, it's a very big market. But the debate about this company, I would say, is are they in that hockey stick moment? So they have an approved product. Part of that history that you showed on the chart was getting the product, you know, finalized, you know, through final clinical trials and then eventually getting their approval. So that's a little bit of the earlier history, actually, in the early listing. Then it's all about commercial sales. And that's where we are now. You know, are they going to hit their hockey stick forecast? And what we've just found out yesterday is that they're not going to. A little bit worse still is that the data that they've been provided by, in terms of the it's called prescription. So the prescription data they've had to date in the last few quarters was wrong.
It's so overstated,
Yeah, so this is overstated. So they had to restate.
Well, you don't want that side of it. Well, you don't mind if it's understated, but they say this. Shield has recently identified that the projection methodology used by a third-party data provider resulted in an overstatement of total prescriptions. And this is the table they give explaining, Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4, and pretty much it was previously 90.5% total sort of growth there, and now it's looking like it's just 77%, so it's dropped quite considerably. So that's taken a massive knock here. So,
and this is a case in point about how it's all about expectations and management. Yeah. Look, it's whoever's fault it is, whether it's the data provider, in the end, it's the share price that gets affected, right? So this is the danger here, is that it's still a nice growth rate. Do you see what I mean? There's still growth in the product. But the problem is that the expectations are set at a certain level, and the pricing is adjusted at that level, right? So, people are looking into the future based on that growth rate. If the growth rate is slower and the hockey stick is less steep, well, then all of a sudden it re-rates. And that's what's happened yesterday. The stock price re-rated. Now, has it overshot? Here's where the debate is, okay? There's a few other elements to this. So one is they need cash, to make that growth happen, because they're investing in sales, et cetera, and the US rollout is expensive. There's headcount associated with it. Now, they've mentioned in their statement that they're actually going to, there's already some cost controls being put in place.
Yeah.
It obviously brings us back to, well, does this mean a cash call? And that's, they have cash on their balance sheet, but they also have debt, right? One thing one should ask themselves is, and I haven't done this because I'm not that close to the story, but it's worth looking at the debt covenants. Are there any covenant breaches as a result? These are all questions that didn't exist 2 days ago, and people are asking themselves today. It may be that there is no issue with their debt. I'll give an example. I've seen other stories where the debt provider calls on the residual cash, right? Do you see what I mean? Yeah. So you don't want to be in that position. You don't want to be piling in, gone to half the price it was 2 days ago, until you get to the bottom of that information. You need to know, are they in breach of any covenants? I don't think so, but I don't know for sure.
I understand. Yeah, but so they say here there's 13.9 million of cash there.
But bear in mind the cash burn is high.
It is very high. Let's look at the interim results. Let's go through, see how much they've. Let's scroll down and see how much they sort of burned in the 6 months prior to that. Operating loss like 11 million in 6 months. I don't know if that kind of operational intensity now. But I know they were rolling out salespeople, but so that cash essentially is going to be, it's a worry. And do you know what I talked about every week on my, Share Pickers Investment Club, I do a webinar and we look through stocks and I put them through all my sort of spreadsheets and stuff, all the fundamentals, and it's a screening thing. And I'm before that, generally look at company stocks. I tend to have a quick talk about different aspects of investing. And yesterday I talked about the risk of reward. Because you see, I literally love microcap, small cap stocks because there is huge upside potential, but there's risk that comes with that, of achieving that upside, that reward. And you have to understand that. And sometimes it's a false economy just going for all stocks that have several 100% upside, when the chance of them actually getting to that target is, against odds. So, I'm not saying don't go for those stocks. You can have a smattering of one or two of those hope pipe potential stocks in your portfolio. But, and I give the example of, like I said, if you had two stocks and you had some money to invest and you saw the broker target on one was like 200% and the broker target on another was 50%, which one do you go for? And you think, well, I'd obviously go for 200%. And then I revealed the first company is a clinical trials biotech pre-revenue. It's going through clinical trials. It has to get success in those trials to get a partner. Then it has to have a commercial rollout strategy. That's 200% upside there. Now, the second one is a software as a service, profitable company, recurring revenue, and it's 50% upside. So that second one, there's probably an 80% chance they'll get that 50%. Whereas the first one, there's probably a 20 or 30% chance they'll get to that thing. So if you weigh that up, the risk of getting that reward, then it's a false economy going for the big upside all the time, because the risks associated with that are very high, So it's good to have one or two of these stocks in your portfolio, because they can be portfolio makers or breakers if you're overexposed to them. But like I said, this is a thing. Sometimes it's, you know, the high probability of achieving a smaller return is a little better place to sit your portfolio and then take the odd sort of, you know, high octane gamble on these other stocks, but don't overexpose. So you don't need to. That's the thing. Yeah. But they do get that success of reward. It can multiply several times, so they'll naturally become a bigger part of your portfolio anyway. So you don't have to go all in on them. That's it. It's about you know, people talk about risk management. It's all about reward management as well. I mean, I've seen people do well. I've done well at these high octane stocks, and then all of a sudden it go boom and can just drop straight back down. So if you're sitting on a profit there, you've got to lose stop losses sometimes on these kind of high risk stocks, because you've got to lock in that profit, because something can come out. A good example of that, Destiny Pharma. You know, I did get my stop losses kicked in, but literally it came out with a release, and look at that. It literally it's going up there, a couple of lower highs there. But that support level at 64 pence just smashed down there and carried on, you know. Mm-hmm. So you should never just think, oh, this, even though that stock, I mean, if you look at this, for example, I think the forecasts on this average forecast is 312% upside. Mm-hmm. But you have to understand, what are the chances actually getting to that? Now, if you get half of that and then nowhere near commercializing yet, that's a good deal. You know, it's a good deal. Take that reward. Don't just sit there expecting to go up to 300%, because it's a high risk stock, you know.
The technical, I guess, not to get boring and technical, but that, you know, the risk adjusted outcome, right?
Yes.
So you need to multiply whatever it is the risk you have, assess a probability of success by the outcome. So if you're 200% upside, but 20%, you have to multiply 200% by 20%. So it's a simple calculation.
Yeah.
You know, you could, you know, and then you can compare the two stories like for like. You know, 80% times 50% versus 20% times 200% upside, right? To compare your two stories. That's how you kind of calibrate the two.
How do you, for example, you know, you're in this field. So how do you, because I often see, for example, I see people, you know, private investors a lot on X, you know, really always going for all stocks that are quite high risk, and especially wildcat drills, never been drilled before. Yeah. And, you know, they show those potential sort of multi-billion barrel reserve or resource down there.
And then,
you know, but, and then they say the chance of success is like 30%. And I think, well, that's nuts when you think of that, you know, because if you just took that at normal odds, that's 3 out of 10. So it's almost the same. If you went to the horse races, or if you invested in, you know, 10 stocks like that, only 3 times you're going to make money. So you have to figure out a way of making good money off those 3 stocks to offset the losses you made in other stocks. But so I try to, whenever I'm investing in companies, I'm trying to weigh up what's the probable chance of me achieving that success. Now, how do you do it with, like, for example, if you look at, you know, you're covering biotech and the global clinical world, how do you weigh up that, you know, the risk? How would a private investor do it? I mean, if a company's like preclinical or going into, how would they do it?
So there's certain industry standards. And I guess what you try to do is, through your own personal research, you try to assess whether they're correct or maybe even incorrect, either to your advantage or don't invest if you assess that they're to your disadvantage. So the industry standards are, anything going in biotech, anything going into phase 1, usually has a 10% probability of getting approval. Into phase 2, it's 35%, and into phase 3 is 65%. Okay. And then once you complete phase 3 trials, you still have another 5 to 10% of risk with the FDA, which we've seen, right? Let's not kid ourselves. We've seen a 95%, you know, and there are many, we have many stories that we can describe on AIM where they still didn't get approval even after phase 3 trials being successful.
Yeah.
So it's 10%, 35%, 65% going into phase 3 trials, and then 95% going into the FDA is a good kind of rule of thumb. Now, every story is different, so you kind of assess whether those probabilities stack up for any given phase, right? You can look at the data, et cetera, et cetera. But they're pretty safe. They're pretty safe rules of thumb. You know what I mean? In a world where, quite frankly, no one knows what the probabilities are, right? That's the issue. But they've come out of years and years of phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 trials across multiple indications. So you need something to work with, right? So those probabilities are, I would say, a good starting point to work from.
But it is important to multiply
the probability by the outcome. How do you cross compare? How do you compare different companies, different assets, different stages, different industries, like you just mentioned, you know, software revenue generating versus biotech? You multiply your probability of success by your outcome, and that gives you your, that's how you can cross compare your different investments.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you know, as if it wasn't complex enough, on top of that, of course, you have to assess the individual company, saying, do they have cash? How much cash they got? Is this their only asset? Is this their only asset? You know, because if they're just a one-trick pony, I mean, pretty much, I hate to call companies that, but I mean, Shield, that is their only, is that their only asset? Are there anything else?
Yeah, it very much is. It's so predicated on the sales of that asset. So whatever happens there is, you know, anything else is irrelevant at this stage. Yeah. But you're right. Say a company has three or four biotech assets, one in phase one, one phase two, one in phase three. Unfortunately, companies often just get valued on their last and, you know, their most advanced asset. But the real way of doing it is you do a sum of the parts of the analysis we just described. So you do each one separately based on their own probabilities of success because of their different staging. And then you multiply it by the outcome, obviously. I won't, you know, not to get too technical, but you can do a risk adjusted, what's known as an risk-adjusted NPV. So you obviously have to, a lot of these biotech drugs are going to be selling in 10 years, right? So you obviously have to assess the time value of money, right? So you have to bring that, those future earnings back to today and then adjust it further with the probability of success. So let's say it's in phase one, then you multiply that risk-adjusted, sorry, you multiply that NPV that you've discounted all those future earnings from that product till today, and then you multiply that by 10%, which is your risk adjustment because it's going into phase one.
Yeah, you see what I mean?
It's a bit technical, and then you add up all your different programs, and that gives you a sum of the parts.
But do you know what? Because I had some people say, why did you get out of Destiny Pharma? I thought you were saying it was like 500% upside. And I said, but that's if everything goes right. If everything actually goes right, it's 500% upside. But if you're sitting on, like, I was sitting on 95% when my stop loss is cut in. But said, you can't, you know, just look down the nose and poo-poo 95%, you know, profit. Because it, even if you do, I mean, like I said, if you can compound a double-digit return every year, it really adds up. I mean, I don't think even, you know, Warren Buffett does, I think in 20s, I think he's compounded 20%, 23% over 50 years, which is a heck of a lot. And to just give you an example, if you started off at £10,000 and you compound 40% every year, that's 6 million return, that's 6 million quid. So on 10,000. So, you know, when you're investing, you should look at, you know, getting a safe sort of 20, 30% on a regular basis. You may do a stop loss there, but not cutting the upside. This is what I tend to do is literally, I would have stop losses below. But I said, you know, it's on a mathematical basis, you know, the maximum you can lose any stop is 100%. Let's say you put 20% stop loss in, it's only 20%. Now, the upside is multiples. So you don't really, you know, limit the upside, because, but you do limit the downside. And if you do that, it will help so much. And so that's what I did with Destiny. I just moved my stops up every time it's sort of really rallied, because you never know what's going to happen. One bit of news, like you say, like that stock there, one bit of news came out, I just created it. It's a bit of delay on their most you know, advanced asset, and maybe a bit more spend. But it wasn't disastrous, like, results of clinical trials. But that's how the market can react, you know. And so you can't just say, "Oh, I'm not worried about 95% profit. I'm going for 500%" because the chances of that happening are a lot slimmer than you getting, like, you know, 50 or 40% or whatever. But let's take Destiny Pharma, for example. Let's say, because they've got now phase one, one of the M3 asset going into phase three. Mm-hmm. So they say that's $1 billion sales, for example. So you'd put that, the chance of that getting towards success was 65% pretty much. Is it going to phase three? Yeah, is that right?
Exactly. Okay. That's a good example of one.
Yeah.
You have to assess whether or not you think those billion in sales is actually going to happen. You know, is it $1 billion or is it 200 million? These are all questions you have to assess. You know, you can't just take it as given. And then that's what I mean by, you know, not to get technical again, but that's what I mean by $1 billion in sales when? $1 billion in sales in 5 years, in 10 years?
Yeah.
Well, $1 billion in sales in 10 years discounted to today is not $1 billion today. Do you know what I mean? So you have to discount those future earnings till today and then adjust it by 65%. Then you do your 65% probability of success, right? Those are the two features.
Yeah. Do you know what? I didn't go that into it. I just thought at the time they had two phase three assets. They just raised like $8 million. and they were valued at like 22 million market cap. And I thought, I don't know any company out there. And obviously that M3 is their most advanced asset, but XF platform, they're talking about 2 billion. So it's double that. And they own that outright. And so I thought, it seems to me they've got like a runway of 18 months here. To get through these, to find a partner on the second asset. They got a partner on the first asset, and I just thought it's cheap. You know, it literally was valued at, what, just take the cash off, about 18 million market cap for two, three. I know companies in just with one asset going through into phase three, the value got higher than that. I thought it's nuts, really. So I just thought it was cheap.
No, for sure. I mean, you played that one right. You were telling me to buy it, and I didn't, and I should have. And it's the rally, I did. Yeah. It's rare that we play things right on both ends, right? So you got in at the right time, but it's the stop losses really that were key, because I can't help it, but I felt the way I still feel about that stock, and that's why I never got in, which is the programs, they have their issues, and that's why they're not able to partner them, okay? The first one partnered at a million up front. And, you know, it wasn't really that much of a success in the sense that, you know, you a million upfront payment on a phase three asset is not really much upfront payment, right?
No.
And all the future potential bio dollars or whatever that were included in that are still to be demonstrated. So I wasn't too sure about the second program getting partnered properly. Anyways, long story short, we are where we are today. But look at what you've achieved. You know, by putting your stop losses in, you got... You got the rally, you locked it in, and irrespective of what happened, you're out. You know, and that's
there's always opportunities in the market like that. And I keep saying, you know, I'm writing a book actually, finishing it. But I mean, the last 2 years have transformed the way I invest. I did very well in the bull market, but I realized it was a strategy very much for a bull market. You know, it was high risk, you know, stocks. They were flying because they were tiny and it was easy to raise money. But then you realize that changes and you have to evolve the strategy a little bit. And it took a bit of a hit then on the downward, but now I've changed a lot. And in fact, I think the majority of my portfolio are profitable companies. There's one or two loss-making that are going to be profitable. There's one, you know, competes of hope hypothetical stock. But generally, I think 8 stocks out of the 10 I own are profitable, but I find them undervalued and growing. I never before, I always messed around with stop losses, but now I have a rigid, you know, risk. And when you think of it, it's nuts, really, that I never did formulate that because... It's, you know, and I investing, it's all about risk and reward management. And people talk about risk management, reward. But also when you're on a reward and you've got the reward, manage that as well. Because don't just sit there thinking, I'm going to profit now. Yay. And all of a sudden, because like I say, if you're in a volatile stock, you can be wiped out next day. So I say this to many people, if you can, whenever you invest in a company, if you invest at the right level, I mean, for example, let's talk about, a revenue generating profitable company. If it's growing, and it's good value, and you just look at the chart and you realize it's starting to rally, it's going into uptrend. There's no reason why that should come down by 20%, you know, in the next few sessions. So just if it does, something's gone wrong generally, because that's quite a big drop if you've got everything right. If you've done the evaluations on the growth, the value, the forecast, all that, and it's starting to move an uptrend, all of a sudden it drops by 20%, you've got it wrong. So I will now, 20%, anything I buy, stop loss there. And if it trips it out and bounces back up, fair enough, I'll reassess. But that limits my losses completely. And that is, then I know. And in fact, you know, since I've been doing it, it almost gives me a sense of peace because I know I can't lose 100% on it. I can only lose 20%. And then if I'm only exposing myself like 3% per stock, with total portfolio value, then it's even 0.6%. So essentially, if you've got a £100,000 portfolio, for example, for round figures, and I put £3,000 in a stock, and I put a 20% stop loss, I can only lose £600. That's all I can lose. And that gives me a sense of, you know, peace, really, because I think if it goes wrong, it goes wrong. I move on to the next one. It's like, you know, I got that wrong, but you learn from it. I think to be successful, you have to, you know, manage that risk a little bit and also the reward, you know. And so you're having
So completely agree with you. And you manage your reward by having that, what do you call it, a trailing stop loss, you know, 20% trailing.
Yeah.
But The only one thing I would comment on in small cap AIM companies is often the stop losses don't work. You know what I mean? Because the stock opens up. I think Shield opened up 50% down. So it closed at 5 or 6p and it opened up at 2.5p the next morning. So I don't know how people you know, that's a different story. Just some CFD
I was never into sheep. I mean, first of all, I talk about, you know, in this book is three concepts. It's what, when, how. What is your fundamental research, you know? And straight away, Shield never ticks the box for me. It was burning too much cash, and they had to get, you know, to profitability very quickly, pretty much, with that cash, or go back to the market. To me, I wouldn't have even been interested in that. I mean, I want a company, at least, I always say, if you're looking at companies that are pre-revenue, loss-making, whatever, pre-revenue or loss-making, then you've got to have 12 months at least runway, you know, because that will prevent that. But now their cash burn is, like I said, 11 million in 6 months. Now they've got 13, they're 14. So they wouldn't have ticked that first box. But then I look at the when to, and look at, you know, uptrends. And then the how is the management of it all. And that's the risk-reward thing. So it wouldn't have got through that three levels of security, pretty much. It wouldn't have got through that first level of security for me.
Yeah.
I've never been tempted. But, But if you're very illiquid stocks, you be careful. And very
I think
stocks,
the problem here in this one is that last level of security with the stop loss, in this instance, probably wouldn't have worked, because I think the stop loss would have just been broken through. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, but it's not always the case. And you're absolutely right. You know, why not put it in? It can still, most of the time, it will protect you.
And first and foremost, if you are like managing your portfolio correctly, like I say, you are doing like 3%, you know, like I'll start off at 3% and average up pretty much. If you start off at 3%, then even if it doesn't kick in, you know, even 3%. You know, if it's the worst case scenario happens, it's 3%.
Yeah.
You know, and second worst case scenario, you lost, you know, 20% of 3%. So it's fine. Individual stock. So anything you're looking at the moment? Anything you bought or sold, Vadim, recently?
No, not really. I haven't bought anything. I'm interested in this Shield outcome. Like, it's good that we talked about this today, because, you know, I do want to see how this unravels. And I think, you know, as long as those things, if they can calm the market, if indeed this is the case, I don't know yet. But I'm curious to see what this implication is for cash, the cash runway, right? Mm. So if the implication is there's going to be another raise, that might be a good value raise. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
That might be the one to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at... I'm just wary of the old, you know, the cash burn there somewhere. And I say it's one.
No, that's what I mean. Like, if they end up doing a distressed placing, that's my point. That's why all of a sudden this one has come into the kind of under the radar. It wasn't under the radar. I was looking at it kind of from a distance, worried about this hockey stick, genuinely worried that the hockey stick is too aggressive. You know what I mean? And lo and behold, it was. And now the question is, you know, there is something still to be said, something, a nagging, you know, is part of this is not always about looking for stocks to buy, but looking for stocks to avoid, you know. Shield, yes. I have to say,
that
I,
is, I've been a that bit. Is an, yeah. Now, do you know what? That's very good. And we all, and you have to understand, it takes a while of discipline, really, but not jumping on every stock. But it is it is having a quality filter and thinking, okay, it may bounce. But is this the kind of company I can put my money in and relax a bit and see? And I think almost like say, what companies do you avoid? But by doing that, you improve the quality of your stock picks, you know, by what companies can I avoid. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It is, the only way I find, like the only way ultimately to manage anything is to keep it tractable in your mind is by elimination, right?
Yeah.
So the process of elimination keeps it sane, you know, to manage. Otherwise, it's very difficult. So Shield, I am on the fence still on from, and I always was. I've never invested in. I've watched it go through this roller coaster ride, and it really has been since it listed in 2017, I think, or 2018, something like that. But you know, it's genuinely been a pretty big roller coaster. And yet again, this, you know, underneath it all, they've been progressing this asset, okay? Mm-hmm. And my ultimate problem with this company, and I still don't know, I'm still on the fence, but I've been on the fence for whatever it is, 7 years with this company. So I guess I'm in the no camp. You know what I mean? I'm in the avoid camp still, okay? And, you know, I'm glad I am, because I haven't, you know, it's in the end, it's not done very well. But I'm why I'm on the fence is there's a value for everything, right? There's a price, a good price, and now it seems with this new, say, share price decline, if they can get cashed up, and that might be the time, okay? if there is a placing, that's a distressed discounted placing, but that buys them the cash on the new growth rates to get somewhere, it might be good value now. Okay, yeah, so that's what I'm going to be looking. That's what I'm going to be looking for in the next couple of weeks. Is what is the outcome? Because obviously they're probably going to be talking to investors and, you know, put some more information out. And that's what I'm looking for. But ultimately, my negative on this one is more structural. Is iron really? You know, do they really have an edge with iron? Okay, so you know, a supplement you can buy at every corner of the street. You know, every street corner sells it. There's Holland Barrett's everywhere. It's a mass market. Yes, it's available. Do they really have an edge? And that's the question. You know, can they break
into
this?
I've never really thought of that. I've never really thought of whether their product has a differentiator in any way. You're right. I can buy multivitamins with iron in or just iron supplements. What's the difference between theirs and is it for extreme iron deficiency or what is it? I don't know.
It's mostly for people, and there's a lot of people. So don't get me wrong. In theory, it makes sense. You're looking for a way of delivering iron without giving you GI tract problems, right? Because iron, it does cause issues. It's hard to digest, right? So there's a lot of people with IBS and all kinds of, you know, gut problems that can't deal with iron, and yet they have iron deficiency, right? So this is why it's a prescription product. It's a solution to that. The question is, can they get it? Can they get out there into the market? Can they change behavior? You know, physicians always want to help their patients. So the first thing they do is they say, go to Holland & Barrett, get it for, you know, 1/10 the cost or whatever it is. Do you see what I'm saying? So the first thing that happens is, you know, you have to change behavior. It's just not easy to do. And you have to remember, you know, the hockey stick, if it's not like this and it's slightly like this, that means a hell of a lot more cash burn. Can the company survive it, you know?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's funny, almost. I see a lot of people jumping into stocks, you know, straight away after a big fall. That's, like I said, there are opportunities out there, and largely you can get opportunities from recovery plays, but you have to give it plenty of time to see if it's recovering. Because if it's not, you know, you're literally going to be into a hiding. You're going to lose money. It's almost having the patience. And I use charts for that, just put alerts on and stuff, and I keep an eye on the news. But I mean, like I said, especially with more mature businesses, you know, in fact, a classic actually is Hargreaves Lansdown. You can argue that, you know, they are the biggest provider. They come up with some news today. And if you look at the chart on Hargreaves Lansdown, it's quite interesting because look at this downward trend that they spiked up. And literally recently, until a couple of days ago, they were looking at breaking that downward. So you got a series of, you know, of lower highs. They came out with their interims today. And look at that, it's dropped. And so you want confirmation that they're improving by getting above that previous highs now and rising up. But it's like almost like, will this recover? I don't know, but don't just jump in, you know.
Yeah.
Just look at the fundamentals, you know, see what's happening there, and then look at the chart and say, oh, okay. Because right now, look at that. They've come down from, they are the biggest provider. Asset management provider to the public, pretty much, and it's come down from 23 quid down to 752. They pay like a dividend of like I think it's now 6 or 7% or something, and they've got plenty of cash. And in fact, if you look at their their release today, it's not, you know, catastrophic. I mean, there's still I'm ready to do this down. Is it? Let me just put in the HL. There we are. Hargreaves Lansdown. So half year report there, and it's you know, they're saying that assets under administration up 6% to 1.42, it's new business revenue 368 up to, so anyway, we are, last year was a lower base as well, so they've come down to this now. But now it seems to me that it's not getting a huge worse. I mean, anyway, but new business. It's still got new business, the billion, but it's not as good as it was. So it's down 38%. But revenue, profit before tax, 182, you know, it's not dividend. The dividend is very good, 4%. But it's like, you know, they are going through a period where they understand there's a lot of disruptor brands out there who are offering free share trading, like Trading 212 or Robinhood's coming there, and there's also free trade. They've got a lot of pressure here, but sooner or later, it'll be good value, you know. And if they've been completely downgraded all the time, at one point, does it start to recover? Because it will, because, you know, they've got an excellent balance sheet, they've got plenty of cash. Yeah. Look at that. Where's the opportunity lie? And that's it. It's just having patience, isn't it? And seeing, and you know, with the recovery plays, if it's a mature business with a good model, they can recover and they've got the money to pay good people to come in and sort it out. So it's almost like saying sooner or later it will recover, but now is not the time. It's just bouncing around, but it may not. Those are lows. If it doesn't revisit those lows, I'd say we've seen the bottom here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's having patience to monitor recovery plays, because they always take longer than you think. You know, people just jump into them almost the day they fall, and you think, no, it's going to take, like, from more mature people, it's going to take, you know, 6-12 months at least for it to recover.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think Shield is one to watch for now.
Okay. Marvelous stuff, Vadim. Thanks for that, fella, and hopefully we'll speak to you next week.
Excellent. Thanks, Justin.
The Share Pickers Podcast.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget, if you'd like to register your interest about joining the Share Pickers Investment Club, then please go to sharepickers.com/subscribe.
The Share Pickers Podcast.